This is the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast, episode 131. Well, good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is, folks. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books and, of course, sci-fi books, too. We have epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, space opera, a whole lot more, everything you can think of in the fantasy and sci-fi world, along with the best and brightest authors, too. And we will be getting all of them as we can in the show. I mean, I reach out to authors all the time. We have other folks that are reaching out. If you know of an author that you want to hear, get in touch with me and I will reach out to them. Kicking off the show with this week, let's go ahead and jump into what I'm working on. I am deep into the editing of Paramedics Amazon. That's book 8 in the Extreme Medical Services series. And as that process continues, I'm really getting it ready, because then I send it off to the editors and the proofreaders to get it ready for a release coming up this fall. Also, I've been celebrating the release of the final book in the Huntress Clan saga, which came out last week. Huntress Defender got a bestseller tag in virtual reality. It's a great series of 6 books that I am just super proud of. And I've been working with a small publisher to get those published and out there. And I'm happy to wrap up that series. A little sad to leave those characters behind, at least for now. But I'm happy with the way it wrapped up. So you can watch for that. You can check out that entire series over on Amazon.com, and it's part of the Kindle Unlimited program. If you already have that, you can get them for free. If you want to know what else is going on with me, I urge you to stay tuned for updates at my Facebook group, including sneak peeks of upcoming covers, special giveaways, and lots more. Just check me out over at Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. We talk about our favorite movies, our favorite books. We talk about everything. So come on over and join the fun. Also, you can catch up with me at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. Either place, I look forward to hearing from you. I'm in the comments, chatting with folks. So come on by and join the fun. Okay, let's go ahead and get into this week's featured guest, Eileen Muller. Eileen is a multi-award-winning author of heart-pounding fantasy novels that will keep you turning the page. We dive into her worlds full of magic, love, adventure, and dragons. Eileen lives in New Zealand, which she says, now this is the best part of this. She says she lives in a cave with 4 dragonettes and a shapeshifter, writing for young adults, children, and everyone who loves adventure. This is why I want to go to New Zealand someday, because I'm not necessarily sure she's not kidding. So let's go ahead and get on into this great interview with Eileen. I urge you to check it out. It's coming up right now. Eileen, it's great to have you on the show. I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. And we're beaming all the way from sunny New Zealand. It's a freezing cold winter's day today.
Well, you know, it's a hot August day here, for which, of course, your August is our winter, but that's okay. You know, it's funny. I always am amazed at the fact that I can call somebody 50 miles away and we have a horrible Skype connection, and I can reach out to somebody in New Zealand halfway around the world, literally, and it's like you're next door.
Yeah, well, let's hope that it stays that way. Skype has a notorious reputation down here.
Well, I've had good luck, knock on wood, so far. I think I've talked to, in the last couple of months, 3 or 4 authors from New Zealand, and we've always had a pretty crisp connection. So we'll hope we continue to ride that. Before we get too much farther into the interview, though, I do want to give you an opportunity to kind of share with our readers in the audience a little bit about yourself. So why don't you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, my name's Eileen, and I seem to somehow be involved in all things dragon at the moment. I usually sport dragon horns and dragon wings, but you won't be able to see those today. And I've got a series out, Riders of Fire, which features dragons and riders. I have a Facebook group where my fans love to come out and have dragon fun. And I've also got some kids' books out about dragons. I do write other stuff. It's just that it hasn't been published yet. The dragons seem to be on a roll. So for the moment, they rule.
You know, dragons are what they are. I mean, they're super popular almost all the time. I mean, I have a couple of situations where dragons have popped up in my fantasy books for one reason or another, and I'm always surprised pleasantly at the reaction from my readers.
Yeah, I think there's quite a strong bond. You know, one of the tropes of dragon fiction is you're either fighting them or you're bonding with them. And I think a lot of readers love reading about the bond between dragons and riders, that feeling of understanding, usually telepathy, where they have somebody that gets them, gets all of their emotions, understands who they are, and treasures them. And I think it's a wonderful, wonderful bond that people enjoy reading about. And you get to fly. You get to go soar above, you know, like you can have that bond in a romance, right? But when you've got dragons, you get to fly on dragon back and smite your enemies with fire and do all those things that make readers feel really powerful when they read.
And it's all things dragons, too, because it's funny. In my latest series, I had the main character. She accidentally imprinted on a dragon egg. And so the people that had the dragon egg had to give it to her then because, you know, it wasn't going to hatch for anybody else. And she spent an entire book like talking to the egg. And it became very popular for people to like, well, is the egg answering her? And I'm like, well, she thinks it is, but it's not really. It's just an egg. But, she had these whole, you know, it was an opportunity for me to have deep conversations with something that, you know, she could just bare her soul. And of course, the dragon is listening the whole time. So when the dragon finally hatches, they're like very connected.
That's amazing. And I think that's what people enjoy is, I mean, that sounds like it's got a bit of a sense of humor in it as well. Just that you've chosen that sort of, the egg can't answer, but she can actually chat to it. And a lot of the dragon books do have people imprinting with eggs, whereas I have my dragons are fully grown when people imprint with them, or young dragons, they're already hatched. So you can imprint with one at any stage of its life.
I noticed that, you know, and you made a great opportunity in your description for your book, the first book in the Riders of Fire. You mentioned, you know, some of the great dragon fantasy stories out there, like the Dragon Riders of Pern. And you know, you talk about, you know, that readers of those books will like yours. And I think that that's, you know, one of those things is carrying on that tradition is so important. I think it's so important for us as authors to give our readers things that carry on those older fantasy stories and on into newer areas and newer ideas for stories that we're able to come up with. I think it's a great homage to Anne McCaffrey and others that you do things like that.
Yeah, I've had quite a lot of readers when they've reviewed my books have said, wow, this is the best thing since Pern. And then I've had a couple of Pern diehards say, how dare anyone compare this to Pern? It's not Pern. It's something different. And I probably shouldn't talk about my worst reviews, but my worst review was enormous, big, long diatribe about every single aspect of my books that were not like Pern, which was quite interesting because I was never trying to write Pern. I was writing my own spin on bonding with dragons, dragon riders, and adventures that people could have in fighting quite an unusual enemy. I suppose I've done something similar to Anne McCaffrey in the fact that I've put a little bit of science fiction into my series, but a lot of people don't realize it until they get to the end of the series and realize the secret behind how the enemy clones all his monsters. And he's actually come through from a dystopian future Earth and is cloning monsters. And so you're in a fantasy setting with an enemy who's high tech. But he doesn't look high tech because it's all hidden in his secret lair sort of thing. So I suppose there are some aspects that are similar in terms of bonding with the dragons, the great dragon adventures, the sense of oneness, the unity. And I love action in my book. So there is a lot of action. I just love nonstop action.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that. I love that you've kind of have this blended hidden, you know, science fiction aspect to your story. I think that's so, I think it's a great way to kind of work in an explanation to all of the fantasy that's going on. You know, at some point you say, but there is a reason for it. There is an explanation for it. And you know, it's kind of an extra kind of bonus aha moment for your readers to kind of give it all credibility.
Yeah, I mean, people know that Commander Zins, who creates Starrocks, look like warthogs, but they stand upright. So their faces like warthogs and they have big furry bodies and claws, and they're basically bred for viciousness. There is the odd one that ends up not being completely awful, but most of them are pretty terrible. But Commander Zins came through the World Gate and breeds these monsters because he wants to, you know, take over the realm and harness the dragon's power. And there are certain things in the realm that he wants to actually harness, which, you know, become apparent during the series. And so there are hints at the beginning. They say he doesn't breed them. He grows them like plants. The Tharoks are all genderless because he doesn't need to breed them. He clones them. So they don't have a gender. And there's a few little hints like that in the first couple of books. And then as things go on and as some of our people end up, you know, trapped and captured in Death Valley, where he's situated. And he's taken a verdant, beautiful valley and turned it into basically looks like a mining heap. The whole thing's arid and dusty and dry. He's killed all the vegetation and he's mining precious minerals. And we find out as the, you know, people don't know why, but we find out as the story goes on and we get a few scenes from his perspective. And we get to see how human he is and what shaped him as well, which I always like in a villain, that you get little glimpses into who they are and what motivates them.
And I like the, you know, and just in the description, you know, talking about the fact that the main character, I guess, is Izara. Is that her name?
Yeah, Izara.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And she's, you know, that she is kind of, you know, not supposed to believe that dragons are even exist, right? And then she imprints one and, of course, finds out that way. I love that revelation of a hidden world and that kind of concept of, you know, that resistance that she's going to have initially to what's going to happen to her.
Yeah, when we meet Izara, she's fighting with someone in the marketplace, or someone attacks her in the marketplace with a sword, and it ends up being a play fight. But, you know, she gets told off for fighting in the marketplace, wanders around, and then this creepy old guy shows her some fabric, and on the fabric are some beautiful dragons. And she's so captivated by it, but she has to hide it because she can't be seen to be even talking or speaking of dragons because it's illegal in Lush Valley where they live. And we talk about the hidden world, but it's actually the inverse. Izara is living in a little hidden world. She's closeted in this horseshoe of mountains, and it's pretty impassable. There's a couple of passes to get out of there, but it takes days' journey and, you know, days of journeying. And so she's in this little valley where nobody believes in dragons, and everywhere else, everybody knows that they're there, but the occupants of the valley have slaughtered dragons whenever they've come near for years, even though the dragons are trying to protect them. So the dragons just don't go there anymore. And here she is, ignorant and unprepared, and she gets visited by the Queen of the Dragons, who's seeking a new rider after 20 years of being riderless.
That's amazing. That I love that reverse of the hidden world concept. Yeah, how cool that is. What a great idea to come up with it that way.
Yeah, well, I'd never thought of the hidden world until you mentioned it. And I thought, actually, it's round the other way. The dragons aren't hidden. The main character is living a whole alternate reality, not realizing, you know, what the story was. And part of the series is the people in Lush Valley suddenly realizing that they've done everything wrong for years and having to turn around. And, she does go back to Lush Valley at some stage in the series. And so the books go through, there's six books, and the first one is Izara's journey, and you get to meet her brother in the first scene and her mum and dad. So her brother Tamaz and her mother Marlies and father Hans. And what they didn't know, Tamaz and Izara, is that her parents were dragon riders and the mother committed a terrible crime. And you don't find that out until book two, so I'm not going to tell you. But because she committed a terrible crime, they fled, and the only place they could hide was Lush Valley. So they just pretended they were farmers and lived there for years without actually telling their kids why. But they trained their children to fight and, you know, sword fighting and archery. So the kids are actually really good at all this, but they have no idea why their parents are so good at it or why it's so important that their parents drilled them from a really young age. So in book two, Tamaz stays behind in Lush Valley. He's wondering what the hang has happened to his sister. He's like, how's she going and what's happened to her? And then the valley actually gets attacked and overrun, and he has to start fighting to save people. Yeah, his father gets dragged into prison. His mother disappears off to redeem herself on a quest set by the Queen of the Dragons, Zerusha, and she has to go and redeem herself to prove herself worthy again to be a dragon rider, and everything comes into action. So the first book is Azara. The second book is Tamaz's journey, and he's one of my favourite characters. He's the sort of guy, it's called Dragon Hero, and it's like he has to save the world. He never intended to save anybody, and he has to just save people one at a time throughout the entire book. He just has one person and another person that he loves dragged into some terrible scrape. And he's just the coolest character. I decided that I didn't want to write him as a big, strong alpha male. I wanted to write him as someone who was really, really compassionate. And I've got a lot of readers that really like his story as a result.
Yeah, I was going to just to stop on that for a second because, it's those things that we do with our characters that are unexpected that I think make them most endearing, not just to our readers, but to us as well.
Yeah, we've got another character in book three called Kirian, who he sort of crops up in book one and he's just this cheeky young guy. But in book three, he really comes, really comes to the fore, and he is a prankster. Everything he does is a practical joke, and he's so cheeky and he's so loving and adorable, and he's got such a wonderful sense of daring and loves to take risks. And half the time those risks work out wonderfully, like he comes up with amazing battle strategies and everyone tells him they'll never work. Sometimes they work, sometimes he fails abysmally. So I think readers really enjoy reading about Kirian and him and interacting with all the other main characters, like Roberto, who is Azara's dragon master and has to train her. He can't stand her because, she's ignorant and she doesn't even know that dragons exist, and he's saddled with having to train this useless girl. But as the series goes on, stuff happens. But Kirian, people love seeing the way he interacts with everybody because he gets half the time he's getting into trouble and half the time he's saving the day. And I think readers really enjoy reading that because they're like, what's going to happen this time? Is he going to fail? Is he going to succeed? So that sort of puts them on a bit of a knife edge too.
Well, yeah. And it's so much fun to do that because I've done something like similar to that with the character that always has a plan and he always says, trust me. And everybody groans. And it's gotten to the point now, I look forward to the next opportunity to drop the line, because I'm picturing readers that are into the series just, rolling their eyes like, oh my goodness, he's not going to say, trust me again. And, and it doesn't always work out. So there's really no reason to actually trust him that much. And yeah, so much
actually,
fun.
That reminds me of my that is really cool. It's really, really fun. And do you find yourself sometimes laughing as writing things? Like sometimes I'm laughing at it, going, "Oh, my readers are going to love this."
Yeah. I I'm instantly like, I'll like text my wife or something. Even though we're in the same house right now because we're all locked down, but it is funny. I'll just text her from my office and say, "Oh, I just did this, in a story," and she'll kind of laugh back because she gets to read everything first anyway. So she's always liking to know what I'm working on next.
Oh, that's really cool. Have you also had moments where writing a scene has made you cry?
Yeah, and you get chills. In fact, there was a moment in a series where the dragons came into the series that even to this day, when I every now and then I'll listen to the end of one of the final chapters in this book, because the narrator nails the scene where the dragons are called. It just like, even now I get chills just listening to someone perform that part of it, which, it amazes me that I actually wrote something like that, because I'll sit there and go, where did that come from? Because I don't think that I'm anything super special. I just was like, I literally think somebody's throwing stuff into my brain sometimes.
It's amazing, isn't it? I was just laughing silently, so I didn't cut across you. But it is like that. Sometimes I go back and I read something and go, wow, how did that come out of me? But I think one of the things my readers really love is the fact that I give them an emotional roller coaster. So I decided when I started writing that I wanted to write about characters that, were like real people with failings and had real doubts and fears and real issues they were dealing with and issues that readers could relate to. But I wanted to write about emotions that mattered. And I decided that that was going to be one of my main ways of connecting with my readers was through the emotions and also through the action and creating characters that they absolutely loved. In a world that has, there's a Swiss saying, I lived in Switzerland for a long time. There's a Swiss saying that something that has hands and feet. So it means that you can actually, you can sense it and feel it and be part of it. And I wanted a world that had hands and feet.
It's so important to really connect emotionally, both with your writing, but then through that with your readers. But I think it starts with the words on the page. It starts with you building that emotional roller coaster for yourself, because if you don't feel it, they're not going to feel it.
Yeah. Although there are times, you know, when you're writing, writing's an interesting journey because you need to turn up to work and write no matter how you're feeling and no matter how things are going. It's sort of if you don't get the words on the page, then you're not producing books. And I think sometimes there are some scenes that I slog through thinking, this is really difficult. I'm sure that scene is terrible. And I just keep going. And when I go back and read them, I go, hey, that was actually great. I was just having a bad day.
But you're right. You have to treat it like a job. And I think a lot of writers, part of their struggle is making themselves just get in the chair. It's not necessarily that they aren't, that they can't write. It's that they haven't made, for whatever reason, gotten themselves to actually sit down behind the keyboard and just start something. I've often said that, you know, if you can't do anything else, have the character make a sandwich. You know, just do something ordinary until the inspiration starts to strike you.
Yeah, because it's in the writing that the ideas come.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
My biggest issue is not getting in the seat. I'm in the seat a lot. It's really easy to be in my seat, but there's so many marketing things and fun with my readers online and so many different things to do each day that sometimes I find a couple of weeks go by and I haven't written, but I've been working long hours doing my marketing, doing all my admin, doing all the things that need doing. So, that's always a challenge for me. And I'm also a person who I like to work in blocks. So mm-hmm. I love to write for a whole month and do practically nothing else. And I'll be really scarce everywhere and nobody sees me. And then I come up and I've got a book, you know.
Yep. But,
so it is always that battle for each person to find their style and find out what works for them in terms of a lifestyle and how to organize their work. And I am constantly saying, I will write every day. And I used to do it a lot, and now I tend to work in blocks and do stuff. So my next challenge is to try and get back into the every morning doing my words before I do anything else. But yeah,
you know, and I think that's important that you note that there, there's no one way to do this. For every author, there is a different version of how they write and how they're successful with their writing to get the words down. And the other part of that is that can change over time for each of us. My routine completely got screwed up when my wife came home from work full time to
tell
work
me about
from home.
It.
I had to build a new office because where I was working was too close to where she was working, and I had to like move to the other side of the house. So it is, and I think that we need to give ourselves permission to do that, to be open to changing our routine a little bit until we find what the new version of work works.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Last year, my dad got cancer, and that was quite a big shock. And it was completely unexpected. He broke his hip, and when he went into hospital, we found out he had cancer. So that was really, really difficult. And I had a whole lot of work going on and things going on at the same time, some other stuff. And I basically, everything I wrote, I couldn't stand. And I sort of like for a month or two, and I ended up throwing it all out. And I thought, right, I've got to change the way I'm working. So I set up a dictation system. And I went out and I walked for an entire month. I went out first thing in the morning and I walked all day dictating. So I was walking around laughing to myself as I was dictating things and crying as I was killing off my favorite characters. Spoiler alert there. And Azara doesn't die. It's okay. But some lovely characters do. And my readers are like, oh, no, but she had to. It had to happen. Whoops, I've given you a hint because I've told you the gender of the character. But anyway, at the end of a month, I dictated two books. Now, they were in really messy, messy shape. You know, they were very, very rough first drafts. But then it was really fast job to go through and rewrite them. So, that was really good. And it got me out of the house doing something. So now I have a new way of working. I can dictate or I can type. And I know that I'm going to get my words in somewhere or other.
That's great. Hey, listen, before we wrap up, I know you have something going on and I wanted to kind of mention it. You're actually participating in the Enchanted Kingdoms, a fairy tale retelling box set of 20 novels, and one of which I'm assuming is yours. Tell me a little bit about that project and what folks can do to kind of keep their eyes open for it.
So a group of authors got together and decided that we would like to do something for charity. And it was pre-COVID days, well, not pre-COVID, but pre-world awareness about COVID. So they chose a charity and they chose Puzzle Piece, who are a New York-based charity who help children with autism. And we are all writing novels to go into the Enchanted Kingdoms box set. And it's published by Enchanted Quill Press, which is they specialize in fairy tale retellings. I think they've got 50 fairy tale retellings coming out this year, one every week, which is amazing, with a whole number of authors that co-write with some of the people from that particular indie publisher. So they offered me an opportunity to be involved and I was thrilled, but I decided if I was going to be involved, I didn't want to write one book. I would want to write a series, and that would be the first novel in the series. So I'm co-writing that with AJ Ponder. So we're writing an urban fantasy dragon shifter story, and we're basing it on Snow White and Rose Red. And there are a lot of different fairy tales in the box set. 20 novels, each a minimum of 50,000 words, means you're going to be reading over 1 million words. And that is up for 99 cents on Barnes & Noble and from the 1st of September on Amazon as well. So that's a really exciting opportunity to be involved. And I've met a lovely network of authors who are all working to help children with autism.
That's just amazing. I'll make sure I put that out there so that folks can find it. We'll have links to it because it's out on pre-order now, correct?
Yeah, it's on pre-order on Barnes & Noble and iBooks now, and it'll be from 1st of September, it'll be up on Amazon as well. So that would be really cool.
Excellent. So I will make sure we link to that and promote it for you, because that's always great to support a good cause. Eileen, one last thing. I know you've got a very active Facebook group, and there's a big event going on the day after we record this, so people will have missed it. But I want them to know that you do fun stuff in your group. Tell us a little bit about what you have planned.
Okay, so tomorrow AJ Ponder is launching a novella called The Secret Story, and she sort of said, you know, have you got any ideas for my launch? And I said, well, I've had, you know, three or four launch parties in my Facebook group. We started it in March and we launched Dragonmore, which was book five. In April we launched a box set, which, by the way, is until the 31st of August is on sale at 99 cents, and after that it'll be going up to $9.99. So if anyone wants to try my series, they can look for the Riders of Fire box set. And then in June we launched Sea Dragon, which was the final book in Riders of Fire, and my next series is coming out early next year, Riders of Fire Dragon Masters. So I didn't really have anything much going on in my group for the rest of the year, and well, we do actually, but so I suggested AJ do a launch party tomorrow for her novella, and I've put together a collection of my previous published dark fantasy stories. Dark Dragons is the name of the collection. Somehow when I first started writing in New Zealand, I met a whole lot of authors who were into horror, and I got invited into some really dark anthologies. So I've got a few little dragon stories that I'm popping up as a collection tomorrow. And what do? When we have a party, we have just loads of fun and games all day. We did a dragon trivia quiz once. It had about 30 questions with video clues and all sorts of crazy stuff. We often have fun dragon games that people can play, or we get people to caption dragon pictures. We do giveaways with all sorts of prizes and just have fun games. So we're still and we sort of fly by the seat of our pants until the day before, and then we throw all the activities up on Facebook. So we still got a planning session straight after this podcast, actually, to come up with a few more cool ideas. And we're always brainstorming how to do fun dragon stuff. And we've got 1,100. Well, we're five people off 1,100 members. So this was our 1,000-person member party, but we've already got another 100 since then. And the group's only been going for a few months. So I'm really, really pleased with that.
Yeah, it's so, so exciting. I want folks to kind of look your group up. Even though they're going to miss this particular event, I know there will be tons more coming. So look up for Riders of Fire, the group by Eileen Muller, her fan zone. I hope you guys check it out, because a great Facebook group is worth gold, I think, in this day and age, to give us something to distract ourselves from all the other nonsense going on. Eileen, thanks so much for coming on the show. Maybe when you get your next series out next year, we can maybe get you back on the show and talk a little bit about that, because that's we didn't get to it, but that's a prequel series to your Riders of Fire, correct?
It certainly is. It's the story of how Hans and Marlies, Azara's parents, met each other, fell in love, and how the world got broken and Commander Zenz was allowed in. So there's a lot of people's favourite characters from Riders of Fire in that series, and everybody gets to see their backstory. And the backstory is seeded right throughout Riders of Fire, so people who know those characters will get little hints here and there, and now they'll get the down low on how things actually happened.
Excellent.
So I've got a lot of fans out there excited about that. And they're like, why can't we read it already? And I'm like, because I'm still writing it.
Well, Eileen, but anyway, it's been a blast chatting with you. I hope we can get you back on. Please reach out to me when the time comes. And thanks for coming on the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast.
Thank you very much. Have a great day.
And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. I hope you will make sure to catch up with us for a whole lot more. You can check out things over at the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Focus Community Group over on Facebook. And, of course, at the website where we host this podcast at fantasy-focus.com. If you're over there, check out our episode page. There are links right up near the audio player at the top of each episode that allow you to subscribe to the show using your favorite mobile devices, iOS, Android. You can even subscribe by email. Make sure you do that. You don't want to miss any of our upcoming episodes. We've got a very special return visit from author Michael Chatfield on the show, and you'll want to make sure you tune in to that one. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy and Sci-Fi Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis, author of Fun Fantasy Reads. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook at Jamie Davis Books, at my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. And as I said earlier, check out Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers Group and join the fun over there. Whatever you do, though, make sure you come back and catch the next podcast episode. And while you're waiting, don't forget to keep your eyes open, folks, because there's magic all around you.